In the first part of this film, we examined the birth and development of communist ideology. As we have seen, no matter how much they promised they would bring peace and justice to the world, Marx and Engels' theory actually brought only blood and death. Taking Darwin's theory of evolution as its so-called scientific basis, communist ideology spread rapidly, witnessing its first revolution in Russia. After taking power, Lenin, who led the revolution, set up a dictatorship and spread terror over the length and breadth of Russia. Today we know that Lenin had not the slightest feeling of compassion for his enemies, and that he had tens of thousands of opponents of the regime tortured to death or shot. Furthermore, we also know that the famine caused by his mistaken policies led to the deaths of 5 million innocent people. These facts, confirmed by the archives, reveal the bloody history of communism to all. The bloodiest pages of that bloody history, however, were written by another dictator, a man who left even Lenin in the shade. The dictator was Stalin, one of the worst murderers in history. In this part of the film, we shall be seeing the murders committed by Stalin's regime, together with the dimensions of the disasters that Darwinism has visited on the world. Stalin came to power on the death of Lenin and ruled the Soviet Union by fear and torture for nearly the next 30 years. During that time, he was responsible for some 40 million deaths. Stalin spent his first years in power consolidating his position. He managed to sideline Trotsky, whom he perceived as his major rival, and later had him arrested and exiled. In 1929, Stalin implemented a policy known as collectivization. Lenin's experiment in nationalizing the land had remained half-finished, and Russian peasants were still working their own land and selling their own produce in the market. By means of collectivization, Stalin meant to complete Lenin's initiative and to take away all the peasants' lands and produce in the name of the state. Collectivization began with propaganda films. Posing on tractors, Stalin played the role of a leader who would lead Soviet agriculture towards a new dawn. Russian peasants were shown celebrating communism in front of posters of Karl Marx and even dancing with happiness. Yet the truth was very different. In 1930, peasants' produce began to be collected up. The Red Army, one by one, seized the produce from every single field. Some peasants managed to hide their goods rather than give them up. But Communist Party officials searched every nook and cranny, eventually discovering the hiding places. The officials also seized the peasants' agricultural equipment. The peasants were left with nothing to eat and nothing to work the soil with. Eventually, that catastrophe that Lenin had described as the most useful for communism raised its head again: famine. In Ukraine alone, 6 million people starved over the next few years. 2 million died in Kazakhstan, and 1 million in northern Caucasus. Children reduced to skin and bone died in agony. There was another ghastly result of the famine inspired by Stalin: cannibalism. Peasants, maddened by hunger, began to eat corpses. Then an even worse horror emerged. Some peasants had kidnapped children and eaten them. In front of these two Russian peasants, caught eating human flesh, lay the remains of the children they had snatched. Stalin's regime had turned human beings into savage animals, just as communism had intended. Everyone who opposed Stalin's collectivization policy paid with his life. The principal target were the landowners known as kulaks. Posters denigrating the kulaks were put up everywhere. Tens of thousands of kulaks were detained and shot. In actual fact, the regime branded everyone it saw as opposed to its ideology as kulaks. Large numbers of priests and even members of their congregations who attended church frequently were arrested as kulaks. Some were executed. Others were sent to the labor camps, where a slow, lingering death awaited them. These camps were set up all over Russia and were simply another of Stalin's killing machines. Millions of people regarded as enemies of the state were worked to death in them under the most terrible conditions. Some were put to work laboring on canals in the blazing heat. Others were sent off to break rocks in the freezing cold of Siberia. These people, forced to perform hard labor under the worst possible conditions, soon turned into living skeletons. The great majority never left the camps alive. Joseph Stalin was delighted by all this. In a speech to the Communist Party Congress in 1934, he declared collectivization to be a great success and was warmly applauded by the delegates. One by one, Stalin's closest associates took the floor and declared what a genius he was. However, a secret vote at the end of the Congress produced an entirely unexpected result. Out of the 1,900 delegates, 300 voted against Stalin. Stalin was stunned. The ballot forms were immediately collected and burned, and the vote declared invalid. It was then announced that Stalin had been unanimously elected Secretary General of the Communist Party. This was not the end of the matter, however. Stalin decided that that treachery would not go unpunished. About 1,000 of the 1,900 delegates were killed within a few months by Stalin's secret police, the NKVD. Stalin had Sergei Kirov, a popular figure who got a larger ovation than Stalin at the Congress, assassinated. He then staged a huge funeral ceremony in his memory. Stalin walked behind the coffin of the man he himself had had murdered. Dozens of people linked to Kirov were disposed of by the NKVD over the next few weeks. Many officials at the most senior levels of the state were killed by order of Stalin during the 1930s. Some were made to undergo show trials, duly found guilty of all charges, and executed. It was necessary to be a loyal sycophant to survive by Stalin's side. Stalin had many able people disposed of, out of a fear they might emerge as rivals to him. Some of these were army generals. In 1938 and 39, the most prominent generals in the Soviet army were either killed by the secret police or condemned to death at rigged trials. This unbelievable policy of dissemination on Stalin's part meant the country was defenseless in the face of Nazi aggression. Nazi Germany indeed took advantage of the opportunity thus presented to it and invaded Russia on June 22, 1941. German units advanced hundreds of kilometers within a few weeks, burning and destroying everywhere they passed through. Stalin had ignored intelligence reports warning of the likelihood of invasion, and accused those commanders who forwarded those communications to him of cowardice. As a result, the Nazi menace that Stalin had regarded as unimportant eventually forced the Soviet Union into the bloodiest war in history. ~25 million Soviet citizens would lose their lives in the war between 1941 and 1945. However, the number of Soviet citizens killed by Stalin was even higher than that of the number killed by the Nazis. Between 1937 and 1938 alone, 7 million people were detained for political offenses, of whom 1 million were killed. The number of people killed throughout Stalin's regime would eventually reach 40 million. Stalin forced millions of people living under his regime from their homelands by means of internal exile orders issued in a single night. People were crammed into trains and sent off to the dark lands of Siberia.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar! Allah!
Stalin implemented a particularly cruel policy against the Muslim people living in the Caucasus and the Crimea. In one night, May 18, 1944, 400,000 Muslim Tatars living in the Crimea were rounded up from their towns and villages and sent to labor camps in the most distant corners of the Soviet Union. More than half of these were to die before they ever reached their destinations. Mounted NKVD units sent to Muslim villages slaughtered tens of thousands of Muslim women, children, and the elderly included. Behind them were left thousands of deserted Muslim villages. The traces of some of Stalin's terrible slaughter have come to the light of day in our own time. An NKVD mass grave containing 30,000 bodies was found in the vicinity of the city of Minsk. Some of the bones bore torture marks, and there were bullet holes in most of the skulls. This is what communism brought to the world. While the communist system was killing millions, it also terrorized those whom it left alive. Communism was literally a regime of terror. It regarded society as a collection of animals that needed to be managed, and believed that the only way to do that was by fear and terror. Stalin would be applauded for minutes on end at Communist Party congresses. The reason for that was because everyone there was terrified of being the first to stop. Stalin had already killed a number of delegates who had failed to demonstrate the necessary enthusiasm. The Communist Party organized frequent rallies to protest against so-called traitors and agents. Anyone could be a target of that campaign. People earlier regarded as exemplary communists could later appear pictured in the columns of Pravda like savage dogs. Everyone was terrified the same thing might happen to them. One favored tool of the Reign of Terror was mass executions. Thousands of people were publicly executed during Stalin's reign. Communism's reign of terror also dealt a heavy blow to the arts. Pre-communist Russian society had enjoyed a rich culture with great writers, painters, and composers. Yet with the advent of communism, ugliness and crudity came to dominate Russian art. The new style was known as socialist realism and locked all Russia within narrow, lifeless constraints. The frozen nature of communist art is a result of the materialist philosophy that constitutes its worldview. Materialist philosophy regards human beings as simply a collection of matter and is a simplistic belief that seeks to reduce everything to the same matter. The application of this to art ended in a complete fiasco, as it did in all other spheres. True art is an expression of wonder at the aesthetic and other delights given to man by God. In order for art to develop, it is necessary for that yearning in the soul that comes from creation to be freely expressed. In communist dictatorships, however, that atmosphere of freedom was completely eliminated, and art died as people came under constant pressure. Another blow dealt to society came in the field of science. During Stalin's time, all the scientists in the country were forced to sign oaths of loyalty to dialectical materialism. All scientific research was twisted to agree with materialist dogma. The theory of evolution enjoyed a special place among those dogmas so fiercely defended by Stalin. The Soviet dictator's devotion to the theory went right back to his youth. Stalin had been brought up in a religious household and had been religiously educated in a church school. Yet, just as he was preparing to become a priest, he read a summary of Darwin's Origin of Species, and his life suddenly changed. Stalin was easily deceived by the superficial claims of Darwinism and became an atheist. In that state of ignorance, he promptly joined the ranks of the Bolsheviks. The theory of evolution again formed Stalin's most important source of inspiration when he came to power many years later. He was especially keen that the theory should be taught in Soviet schools, and declared the intention behind that. There are three things that we do to disabuse the minds of our seminary students. We had to teach them the age of the earth, the geologic origin, and Darwin's teachings. One of the most striking indications of Stalin's dogmatic attachment to the theory of evolution was the Trofim-Lysenko affair. Trofim-Lysenko was a young agricultural expert in the 1930s. He had an interesting idea. He rejected the Mendelian genetics that had been accepted by the scientific community since the early 20th century and supported instead the idea that living things evolve and acquire their characteristics from the environment, originally proposed by Lamarck, a forerunner of Darwin. Stalin was impressed by Lysenko's nonsense and made him president of the Lenin All-Union Academy of Agricultural Sciences. The years that followed saw the preparation of an agricultural program in the light of Lysenko's idea of evolution, and it was forcibly imposed on villages by party officials. Lysenko believed that if seeds to be sown were kept for a long time in cold water, they would evolve according to their chilly environment. In order to test that idea, tons of seeds were kept in cold water and then sown in the steppes of Siberia. They were all ruined, of course. Lysenko's theory dragged Soviet agriculture back by decades. Yet Stalin continued to support Lysenko up until his death. Stalin was so slavishly attached to Lysenko's theory of evolution that he had no hesitation over having those scientists who rejected it killed. One of these was the world-renowned Russian geneticist Nikolai Ivanovich Vavilov. Vavilov was arrested one night by order of Stalin. He was photographed like a criminal and sent to the labor camps on the grounds of planning to sabotage Soviet agriculture. He died in one of those camps in 1943. Other Russian scientists who believed in Mendelian genetics, such as Muralov, Levitt, and Levin, were taken from their homes by members of the Secret Service in the middle of the night. Most were executed. Stalin, who carried out all this savagery in the name of materialist philosophy and communist ideology, died in 1953. According to a KGB report revealed in 1991, he had had 42 million people killed during his regime. Stalin's cold and arrogant features were a reflection of the dark world of communism itself. God describes the position of such cruel rulers in the Quran. Whenever he holds the upper hand, he goes about the earth corrupting it, destroying people's crops and breeding stock. God does not love corruption. When he is told to have fear for God, he is seized by pride, which drives him to wrongdoing. Hell will be enough for him. What an evil resting place.
Thank you.
The Red Terror in the Soviet Union continued after the death of Stalin. The new Soviet leaders partially moderated the regime at home, but exported communist savagery abroad. The Hungarian bid for new independence from Moscow that began in 1956 was bloodily suppressed by Red Army tanks. The streets of Budapest were filled with corpses. Another resistance movement in Czechoslovakia in the spring of 1968 was again ruthlessly put down by the Red Army. Then the Red Army invaded Afghanistan in 1979. Before the invasion, Afghan communists had staged a revolution in the country with Soviet support and staged mass killings of religious figures there. The Red Army entered the country in order to increase the scale of the slaughter. In the 10 years that followed, Soviet units rained death down on the Muslim Afghan people. Afghan villages were ruthlessly bombed by Soviet planes and helicopters, and Red Army units inflicted the most barbaric tortures on Muslims. One child, whose family were all killed by Soviet troops, described the communist savagery.
They shot my father 3 times, in his chest, his shoulder, and the back of his neck. He fell down dead. My brother and his commander got very angry and fought back. My brother jumped up and grabbed one of their weapons. More Russians came and cut all my brother's fingers off with a bayonet. So, of course, he was helpless. After his fingers had been cut off, they beat him. They shot him in one ear and the bullet came out the other.
Five million Afghan civilians fled the savagery, becoming refugees. They sought refuge in neighboring countries such as Pakistan, and spent years living in dreadful conditions in makeshift tents. Despite all its military might, however, Soviet Russia failed to overcome the Afghan resistance. We'll be right back. The Red Army was forced to leave the country in 1988. The Soviet tanks left hundreds of thousands of innocent people dead behind them, and once again demonstrated the suffering inflicted on humanity by the ideology known as communism. The historical facts we have so far seen demonstrate that although communism emerged surrounded by fine slogans about justice and equality, it really brought humanity nothing but blood and death. Communist ideologues and dictators such as Marx, Engels, Lenin, and Stalin are responsible for the deaths of some 50 million people. Communism literally turned the world into a slaughterhouse. Another ideologue who must share part of that responsibility is Charles Darwin, the man, in other words, who built the basis in natural history for the communist view, as Karl Marx put it. As they staged bloody revolutions, committed ruthless massacres, and waged their wars, communists were actually bringing Darwin's theory to life. That was a theory that regarded human beings as a species of animal, that believed that conflict and fighting were an unchanging law of nature, and that, most important of all, encouraged people to deny God, their creator. That is why it will only be possible for mankind to be freed from communism and other bloody ideologies when the Darwinian deception is done away with. When mankind is woken from the spell of Darwinism and materialist philosophy, it will come to know its creator, God, and will live by the morality he teaches. In fact, God tells us that we have to follow only His way. This is my path, and it is straight, so follow it. Do not follow other ways, or you will become cut off from His way. That is what He instructs you to do, so that hopefully you may do your duty. The Bloody History of Communism, Part 3. The Savagery of Mao's Red China. Guerrilla wars and communist terrorist organizations. 1968 and the communist revolts in the West. Do not miss The Bloody History of Communism, Part 3.
Thank you.